This is a Shift Podcast Network production.
Welcome to Here and Back Again. I'm David O'Callaghan, and this is a podcast looking at all things releasing weekly on streaming and in cinemas with, you know, with your usual pop culture bits thrown in. Well, folks, another week and here we go again on our own. We're going to go down that only road that we've ever known, and like a drifter, yes, we were born to stream alone. And you know what? You know what? I've made up my mind. I ain't wasting no more time. So, shall we begin?
Back in 1977, they detected a sequence. Called it the Wow Signal.
What's it say?
They are coming.
Who are they?
That's the question, right?
Tree Body Problem on Netflix is the big, shiny new sci-fi series from Game of Thrones creators David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. Here teaming with writer Alexander Wu, who did True Blood and The Terror, and is based on the award-winning and best-selling sci-fi series by Chinese author Cixin Liu. First things first, these books are next-level batshit. I mean, brilliant, hugely addictive, and yeah, I'm pumped. I'm ready to rock. The first season of the show seems to be based on the Hugo Award-winning first book in the series, as it moves from 1960s China and starts, you know, bit of decade hopping globally fairly quickly as aliens arrive, and yes, as expected, it all kicks off. Now, you know me, I do love my sci-fi TV shows, and in recent years Apple TV seem to be the biggest fans of this genre, especially, you know, they're pumping out so much sci-fi, especially the highbrow slow-fi version of sci-fi, so I'm very intrigued to see how this one plays out for Netflix. Funnily enough, if this was on Apple, I think the slow build nature of the books and the series would be accepted without question, but with this being Netflix, and also from the creators of Game of Thrones, people may be expecting the kind of wham-bam of an Independence Day or something like that. But definitely, people, you won't be getting that. Nope. As I said, these books are insanely highbrow, and sweet Jesus, when you get the books 2 and 3, woo, what the hell? This is more Expanse kind of freaky sci-fi than, as I said, Independence Day or anything like that. As you can tell, all in for this, and with a cast that includes Rosalind Chow, Benedict Wong, John Bradley, Eliza Gonzalez, Liam Cunningham and John Price, bring it the hell on. All episodes are now streaming, so that's Tree Body Problem, which is now on Netflix, and remember, the Cixin Liu books are available at your very local bookstore. I highly recommend them if that kind of mad shit is your jam.
A friend of mine suggested I come talk to you. I own a roadhouse out in the Florida Keys. Lately, it's been attracting the wrong clientele. I can pay you good money. Judging by your car, you need this.
Well, I like my car.
Think about it. Come on,
bro. I know who you are. Elwood Dalton, the bandit.
That guy's got a knife under his shirt. He just take a big step back and pop me in the face. You can do it.
Roadhouse on Prime Video is a reboot of the 1989 Patrick Swayze cult classic and stars Jake Gyllenhaal and, in his movie debut, Conor Friggin McGregor. Directed by Doug Liman, who gave us Edge of Tomorrow and The Bourne Identity, this streaming exclusive, yeah, kind of tweaks the original's plot and moves its location to the Florida Keys. But basically, we're talking troubled ex-UFC fighter Elwood Dalton, played by Gyllenhaal, who takes up a job as a bouncer at a roadhouse dive bar run by Jessica Williams and, yes, must fight off the ruthless and evil henchmen of a local sketchy businessman played by Billy Magnussen, who, of course, wants to knock down the bar and take over the land for a future property development. Or something like that. Who cares? Plot is not important in any way. I recently rewatched the original Swayze flick, you know, get back in the zone, and it indeed still holds up and was still as dark as I remembered it when I first saw it. Oh my God, the claw, the claw. As for this one, you know what? It smelt of disaster. It looked like disaster, but it's actually half decent in a gloriously nonsensical kind of way. It is a most perfect Friday, Saturday night streaming action movie to enjoy with a couple of beers and some salty snacks. No, it definitely will not change your life, but for 2 hours, you'll enjoy Jake going all in on the role with his abs and wabs to die for. Oh my God, he is so ripped. I felt myself getting fitter watching him. Unbelievable. You'll see beautiful coastal locations, you'll hear scuzzy rock bar music, and most importantly, you'll get some lovely, violent action, especially at the finale. The biggest surprise of all, though, is McGregor. Yes, indeed. A bit mad, because I am not a fan of Mr. McGregor. However, playing Knox, who is a one-man wrecking ball of a henchman, he absolutely went all in on Unhinged, and it definitely worked. He's like a Leprechaun T-1000, or actually maybe it's a T-3033 in the third, as he hams up that Irish accent to the highest Dublin level. Like, we're talking like bleeding beta levels of 10. He's like, oh, get out, bleeding bataya. It's quite funny. Like, and he does steal wherever he walks or wherever he appears, he does steal the scenes. This is indeed what we want from a streaming movie. No, Doug, it probably shouldn't have been on the big screen. It's perfect for a Friday night at home on the couch. Big stars, proper 3-star energy, and something to get us pumped up for the weekend. And very importantly, there is one mid-credit scene at the end, worth staying around for. It's quite funny. So that is Roadhouse, which is now on Prime Video. And from one Irish not-so-legend to two actual Irish legends, just to give you a heads up that All of Us Strangers, featuring Paul Mescal and Andrew Scott, moves from its recent run on the big screen and is now available to stream on Disney Plus. Absolutely beautiful, heartbreaking, a wonderful movie. I've babbled about it previously on the pod, so no need to go back there, but now's your chance to see what all the hype is about and maybe understand all the outrage as to why Andrew Scott was ignored for an Oscar nomination. Shocking stuff, shocking. That's All of Us Strangers, which is now on Disney Plus.
How did you get past security?
I came in the back.
There are no doors on the back of the Pomeraya.
I never said I used the door. I had only been in Palm Beach 2 weeks.
We don't know you.
I'm Maxine Delcourt. But I already knew the Palm Royale, the most exclusive club in the world, was where I belonged.
Evelyn, you are the woman to know in Palm Beach.
I don't like you, Maxine.
You're very good at making things awkward.
Palm Royale on Apple TV Plus is their new 1969 set comedy about a woman, Maxine Simmons, played by Kristen Wiig, who is desperate to gain entrance into Palm Beach High Society. The question is, how much is she willing to sacrifice to achieve her goals? This is an adaptation of Juliet McDaniel's novel Mr. and Mrs. American Pie and comes from Abe Sylvia, who gave us George and Tammy. With a star-studded cast of regulars joining Wiig on our journey, who include Laura Dern, Allison Janney, Ricky Martin, Leslie Bibb and Josh Lucas. Basically, if you enjoyed The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, well, this may be your next binge show. The first 3 of those episodes are now available. All looking good. That's Palm Royale, which is now on Apple TV+. And one for you absolute fitness freaks out there. Once you've done Roadhouse and you're feeling fit from the couch, it's time to watch Physical 100 Season 2 Underground, which is on Netflix and is the Korean reality competition that... It's just mad. Mad as a bag of cats. In case you had forgotten, this show sees 100 contestants in top physical shape compete in a series of grueling challenges to claim the honour and cash award as the last one standing. Like, we're talking Mr. and Mrs. Universe doing CrossFit while competing in Squid Games. That's the kind of madness you're talking about here. I adored the first season, and I know there are a lot of folks who insisted on watching it with the dodgy dubbing on as contestants cheer each other on with very sensual chants of, oh, you look good. That's it. You are such a pumping machine. But either way, I had a blast, and as per usual, had my favourites along the way. This second season takes place in a large mine, hence the underground name. And this season includes first Korean UFC fighter, gold medalist in judo, gold medalist in wrestling. It also has other professions like FBI diplomats, actors, singers, K-pop heads, police officers. Yeah, all the usual. I'm happy to report I the first four episodes went up and I literally binged the crap out of them. I'm so in. I'm like shout, like they always end on a kind of cliffhanger and I absolutely love it. So that is Physical 100 season 2 Underground from Korea, which is now on Netflix. In another of this week's non-English releases, this time from Japan, My Undead Yokai Girlfriend on Prime Video is a J-drama that depicts the extraordinary Japanese folklore of yokai and otaku as a strange relationship and love and mystery is sparked between a lonely college student, Tadashi, who wants nothing more than to find a girlfriend, and Izzy, a yokai girl who accidentally finds herself bonded to him through a magical hex. Is happening here? I have no idea. But the quirky love story takes an unexpected twist as the true intention of Izzy is to exact revenge on a human family for an incident from over 500 years ago. I have no clue what is going on here. All I know is that it's arriving with a lot of buzz. People are very excited. So that is My Undead Yokai Girlfriend, which is now on Prime Video.
The murder rate was off the chart in New York City. Probably worked on 1,500 murder cases. Every single case takes a little piece out of your soul.
I don't think I've ever wanted something more than to get justice for those people.
This was a fierce emotional attack.
You can't shoot five people in New York.
They're gonna hunt your ass down. They're gonna find you.
Homicide New York on Netflix is a new docuseries that comes to us from none other than Dick Wolf. Described as his real-life Law & Order, the TV franchise he is most famous for, this series revisits some of the city's biggest cases through the eyes of the officers and investigators who solved them. These five episodes will be followed later in the year by Homicide Los Angeles. And listen, true crime heads, it's another cracker for you. I know you love your dead bodies all over the gaff. So that is Dick Wolf's Homicide New York, which is now on Netflix.
Watch the series finale of X-Men next Saturday morning. Check your local listings.
I'm grateful to have the chance to say goodbye.
I am proud of you all, my X-Men.
Fate lies in our hands now. Now. Now.
We have to stay vigilant. The professor entrusted us with his dream.
X-Men 97 is a revival of Fox's 90s cartoon X-Men, the animated series, picking up right where that one ended in 1997 with the death of Professor X. This season runs for 10 episodes and a second season has already been greenlit, even though series creator Bo DeMeo was fired earlier this month after completing the scripts for the second season. All a bit cloak and dagger, but hey, a lot of folks are totally pumped for this. And if you happened to have been busy in the 90s, or maybe not even born, because there may be young listeners out there, and you missed the original iconic series, fear not, because that is also up there on Disney+. So the first two episodes are now streaming. That's X-Men 97, which is now on Disney+.
20 years ago, the world fell to shit. Cities put up walls to protect themselves and threw the criminals out so they could fight over what was left. But there are humble motherfuckers like me delivering cargo from one walled city to another. And that's where the cars and guns come in.
Give me the package, no man!
So if I'm here, then the exit is...
Oh, they have a footlocker!
Oh, son of a...
Twisted Metal on Paramount Plus sees Anthony Mackie, Stephanie Bertrese and Nev Campbell star in this slightly insane action comedy based on the classic PlayStation game of the same name. The series follows a man offered a chance at a better life if he can deliver a mysterious package across a post-apocalyptic wasteland. If Last of Us is the highbrow post-apocalyptic TV series and Prime Video's Fallout series is the upcoming mid-brow adaptation, well, yes, Twisted Metal is the absolute lowbrow bargain basement post-apocalyptic madness you may or you may not have been waiting for. Like McGregor earlier, Unhinged seems to be the calling card for this series. Will Arnett provides the voice for psychotic clown Sweet Tooth, who definitely feels like he walked straight off the set of Mad Max 2. Listen, folks, if you're looking for a bit of crazy this weekend or just some dystopian madness and insanity to keep you going until the far superior looking Fallout lands, then yes, Twisted Metal is now on Paramount Plus. Speaking of dystopia, if you happen to have a Selling Sunset sized hole in your viewing schedule, well, fear not, because Buying Beverly Hills returns for its second season this week to Netflix. Following a real estate agency that specializes in high-end property sales, the agency was founded by Mauricio Umansky, and yes, it's a pretty lucrative business, committed to earning big, big commissions. As you know how these things go. With their global portfolio of luxury real estate, you can expect the usual insanely priced houses, having a wee nose inside because we all like to see where we can't live. And this all goes hand in hand with the day-to-day office bitchiness as everyone attempts to outdo each other and get that next big commission. So that's Buying Beverly Hills Season 2, which is now on Netflix. 5 Pounds of Pressure on Prime Video is a new action thriller where an ex-con tries to start over and searches for redemption in his old neighbourhood. But alas, walking the path of forgiveness is a lot harder than expected, and some crossing destinies with an unhappy drug dealer results in all the violence. This may be absolute muck in the old days would be called straight to video. However, with Luke Evans, Kieran Culkin and Alex Pettyfer involved, feck it, I'm back in the room, I'll watch it. That's 5 Pounds of Pressure, which is now on Prime Video. And Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told on Disney Plus is a new documentary that celebrates those boisterous times of Freaknik, the iconic Atlanta street party that drew hundreds of thousands of people in the 80s and 90s, helping put Atlanta on the map culturally. What began as a black college cookout soon became known for lurid tales of highway hookups and legendary late night parties that ultimately led to the festival's downfall. Looks like an absolute rager to end all ragers. That's Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told, which is now on Disney Plus.
I'm paving the road for a lot of other people looking like me to get elected.
Brooklyn's first black representative.
You're about to make history.
You want to be president? You ain't no man.
Maybe we should find your mother.
All you got is your one vote.
You sound just like every other politician.
Do I look like every other politician?
In the new biopic, Shirley, on Netflix, the always wonderful Regina King plays Shirley Chisholm, who in 1972 was the first ever black congresswoman who launched a trailblazing campaign to become the president of the United States. With a script that comes from Oscar-winning 12 Years a Slave screenwriter John Ridley, who also directs, and with a cast that includes the late Lance Reddick, Lucas Hedges, Christina Jackson, Brian Stokes, Mitchell, Terrence Howard and Andre Holland. What is not to love? You gotta love it. That is Shirley, which is now on Netflix. And that is your streaming for the week. Pretty juicy stuff, I have to say. Plenty there to keep you very, very distracted. However, if you fancy getting out of the house, you know, getting a bit of air and then going back inside and catching something on the big screen, well, there are some very intriguing cinema options for you out there too.
For the first time in New York history, a room full of people froze to death in July.
It's an unimaginable evil with the power to kill by fear itself.
Like, literally scared to death?
Now it's headed straight for us.
Is something trying to get out?
Many things.
It's commanding an army of the undead.
I think we're all going to die.
In Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, the Spengler family returns to the iconic New York City firehouse in the sequel to 2021's Ghostbusters Afterlife. When the discovery of an ancient artifact unleashes an evil force, Ghostbusters new and old must unite to protect their home and save the world from a second ice age. Okay, so I thoroughly enjoyed Afterlife. Carrie Coon and Paul Rudd were a fun addition to the original cast, and the various kids were not annoying at all and well up for it, and I particularly liked McKenna Grace's Phoebe character. So the scene had been set, the future of the franchise has been laid out, and we had our new Ghostbusters family and our older ones returning to an iconic setup in New York City. Evan was there, all for the sequel. Obviously we can just dive straight in. 2 hours of all the crack of family fun. What can go wrong? What can go wrong? Yes, how about everything? I mean, this... none of that is what we got here. I mean, for 80 minutes we just get pondering, meandering, dull plot lines with teases of the big bad to come, and then when he does turn up in the 100 minute or so, we get 15 to 20 minutes of a low-key battle and then we're out of there. What the hell, man? What the hell? We also get about 5 to 6 more new characters added onto the already bloated cast, and Kumail Nanjiani, what the feck, an absolute pointless addition. Ah, lads, how can a Ghostbusters movie be boring? It doesn't make any sense. This is directed by Gil Keenan and not Jason Reitman, and while I appreciate they are attempting to keep the family dynamic of the recent franchise going, it all kind of just drags along with half of those characters barely used or just being, as I said earlier, pointless. McKenna Grace and Dan Aykroyd are probably the only two characters who get a decent arc, which is weird since it all felt so natural and organic for the first one of these. This purely feels like a studio sequel cash grab, and Bill Murray's back and makes an even briefer cameo than the last one. Paycheck, Bill. Paycheck. Or maybe they just needed him on the poster. The mini Stay Puffs are back, killing and maiming each other like mini gremlins whenever they get a chance, but they kind of made me chuckle. But overall, it's a tad disappointing, folks. For a movie set in New York City, it also felt all a bit low-key danger-wise. You know, it wasn't as edgy as previous installments, and the previous movie, Defo, had a bigger destruction budget. As for the big bad villain, meh, still have no idea who he is, what the hell his grump is, and, well, his CGI footprint wasn't great. He's a bit naff, actually. All the nostalgia references can be spotted a mile away. Here they come around the corner. Oh, no surprise there. And feel, yes, forced. But you know what? It's Ghostbusters. Fans are still going to go. It's a family day out for the older tweens. And hell, you might even have time for a wee nap and not miss too much. For those who care, by the end of the movie, there is one mid-credit scene, which is kind of funny, but has been done before, and to be honest, there's nothing too profound, so you're not really missing anything if you leave. You may just want to run out there. So there you go. Despite having about 10-15 minutes overall of enjoyment, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire just left me a little bit cold. Yes, I went there. And is now in cinemas.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Hello? I know God saved me for a reason, but I guess I'm still searching for what that reason is.
Immaculate is a new psychological horror movie starring Sydney Sweeney. Cecilia, a woman of devout faith, is warmly welcomed to the picture-perfect Italian countryside, where she is offered a new role at an illustrious convent that tends to dying nuns in their last days. However, it becomes pretty clear to Cecilia fairly quickly that her new home harbours dark and horrifying secrets. Uh-oh. After the horror of Madame Web, Sweeney returns to the genre with an impressive performance that drags this mystery thriller along to its quite batshit finale. Quite reminiscent of those old-school, trashy, religious Euro-horrors of the 70s and 80s, and not to be confused with the plethora of non-themed horror movies of recent years that are all jump and no scare, this one is a more low-key, slow-reveal, slow-burn of a movie as to the horrors which will unfold, and boy oh boy, is it, as I said, mad as a bag of cats. A worthy watch for any fans of the genre, that's Immaculate, which is now in cinemas.
You're meddling with things you don't understand.
Whoa! Now, as you know, here on Night Owls, we think it's very important to keep an open mind.
Please welcome Dr. June Ross Mitchell and Lily, the young subject of the book, Conversations with the Devil.
I really don't think it's a good idea, Jack. It's becoming more unpredictable.
That's a good thing. That's why we still do live TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned for a live television first as we attempt to commune with the devil.
Lily, can you hear me?
Late Night with the Devil is a found footage horror film written, directed and edited by Australian siblings Cameron and Colin Cairns. Presented in that found footage style, David Dastmalchian stars as the host of a 1970s late night talk show titled Night Owls with Jack Delroy. The film purports to be deprived from a rediscovered master tape of an episode from the show's sixth season, broadcast on Halloween 1977. During the live television broadcast, havoc and chaos unfolds and is ramped up as guests who include a psychic who communes with the dead and a parapsychologist who brings her patient, a young girl seemingly possessed by a demon. Again, what can go wrong? What can go wrong? It's a pitch-perfect observation of the vibes of a 1970s late-night chat show environment, and I found that very impressive. And the genius use of the found footage tape concept allows the movie to portray what the public at home are seeing, and then we get the extra behind-the-scenes footage during the ad breaks as the tension, oh, it just builds and builds. And yes, all leads to a quite insane ending. If Immaculate had a batshit ending, this has a double batshit ending, which, despite being telegraphed, is still very disturbing. I mean, stress factor 50 ahoy. Again, as I said, David Dastmalchian is absolutely amazing in the lead and carries the movie throughout in a quite believable way. And again, for me, this harked back to the horror movies of the 1970s and 80s and would definitely have been presented me to White Van VHS Man. He would have said, you gotta watch this, Dave. This was a cracker. I absolutely adore this. Yes, I did. That's if demon possession, stress and the horrors of a late night chat show are things you can actually adore. It's one for horror buffs everywhere. And yes, there may have been a mid-credit scene. my mind tells me there was, but my eyes were so freaked out by what I just seen, I can't remember now if I actually hallucinated that. But something tells me there was. Anyway, you'll just have to go and see. That's Late Night with the Devil, which is now on limited release in cinemas. Robot Dreams is a Spanish-French animated tragicomedy based on the 2007 comic of the same name by Sarah Varon. It's about the inseparable friendship, adventures and misfortunes between a dog and a robot in Manhattan, New York in 1984. The film does not contain any verbal dialogue and was recently nominated for an Oscar at this year's Academy Awards. So this is your chance to catch up on it and see what all that fuss is about. So that's Robot Dreams, which is also on limited release in cinemas. And in the new Argentinian movie The Delinquents, bank employee Moran steals enough money to never work again, then offers his colleague Romain a cut if he hides the cash, while Moran confesses and does what he calculates would be a short jail sentence. Kind of a heist movie with a difference, as you would expect. Plan goes to shift fairly quickly and it all kicks off. So, yeah, nearly. Is it a heist movie in reverse? I have no idea, but I'm here for it. That is The Delinquents from Argentina, which is now on limited release.
What's your name?
Rose Dugdale.
Tell me, what makes you angry?
The class system. Rich people who have lots of things, and in contrast, people who don't have anything at all.
Do you think you would ever be prepared for militant action?
And finally in cinemas, Baltimore is based on the infamous true story of the English heiress who became a revolutionary and joined the Provisional IRA. Debutante Rose Dugdale, played here by Imogen Poots, enjoys a life of wealth and privilege, but her rebellious nature soon leads her down a militant path. Amongst the political turmoil of the 1970s, her sympathy towards the IRA's conflict evolves into radicalisation, culminating in an armed raid on an Irish estate with three comrades. However, when her simple heist turns violent, is Rose prepared to face the devastating consequences? In a weird twist of fate and timing, Rose Dugdale herself passed away this week on Monday, March 18th. Yes, the week the movie is due for release. Oh, very, very, very weird. So arriving with a lot of buzz, a lot of people giving it all the stars. So yeah, Baltimore is now in cinemas. And there you go. That is your cinema for the week. Told you, there's something for everyone. Streaming, movies, praise be, people, praise be. Moving swiftly along, let's look at three things that caught our eye in pop culture this week. First up this week, Margot Robbie and her production company Lucky Chap are hoping to strike gold yet again in the area of popular intellectual properties that don't operate with any kind of plot or storyline. And that is with, wait for it, The Sims. What? According to Hollywood Trades, she has tapped up Loki's Karen Herron to both write and direct the movie. Yes, a game which is basically about partaking in everyday, normal, middle-class life with, as I said, virtually no story or plotline. Of course we're excited. It's Margot. And let's just see what happens. So that's Margot Robbie going after The Sims. Very intrigued. Next up, and a few weeks back, we discussed Liam Neeson's next big franchise being a comedy. And that was a reboot of Leslie Nielsen's Lieutenant Frank Drebin in a new Naked Gun movie, where he will actually play Drebin's son, Frank Drebin Jr. Well, if you recall the movies, Priscilla Presley played Drebin's love interest in those movies. And well, according to some trades, we may have our new love interest for Liam Neeson. And this is either pure genius or pure madness or pure nonsense. But it looks like Sandra Hüller is up for the role. Yes, yes, what? Anatomy of a Falls and The Zone of Interest's amazing and recent breakout star is in line for a call-up. I love her very, very much. So feck it, I'm all in on this possibility. Whether it becomes a reality or not, who gives a crap? That's for another time. But for now, we can but dream. And finally this week, who doesn't love a sweet Paddy's Day social post from two of our favourite celebrities hanging out together, Paul Mescal and honorary Irishwoman Ayo Adebiri, just chilling with all the shamrocks on their Instagrams, very cute, very lovely, and you know, people saying, you should make a film together, kids, because we adore you. And then the socials had a meltdown. I mean, the plot thickened because armchair detectives first noticed that New York Times best-selling author Emily Henry reposted the photo to her Instagram. Then, if that wasn't enough, the screenwriter of Henry's upcoming movie of her book Beach Read also reposted the picture. And yes, as you can imagine, folks lost their collective minds. So much so that sales of the book have already started to spike exponentially, purely based on the possibility that this movie is happening with these actors. Whether this is just very clever from the author and the screenwriter and they want these actors, or whether it was a slow reveal that they are working on it right now. It's the story of January Andrews, a successful romance novel writer who is struggling after the death of her father and the discovery that he was having an affair. While living in his old beach house to prepare to sell it, she runs into August Everett, her former rival in college and now an acclaimed literary fiction author. They reconnect, bond over a struggling writer's block, and then challenge each other to spend the summer writing a novel in each other's genres. Now, that is my kind of rom-com. Whether this all comes to fruition, eh, who knows. But feck it, the book is out there. Maybe, you know, get ahead of the posse, have a nose. This is definitely a case of read it before you see them in it. But fingers crossed, it's not just another crazy online plotline, you know. Taylor Swift did not write Argyle. Some things are wrong. Kate Middleton can't do Photoshop. Some things are right. And that is us. That is us. We're all done. Wrapped up with a bow. Go forth, or fifth, and enjoy all that lies before you this weekend. This is Dale O'Callaghan for the Here and Back Again podcast, wishing you all the best. All the best as his voice breaks. And until next week, stay safe and binge happy. Okay. Focus. No one's listening. Well, hello there, post-credits traveler. Welcome yet again. Da-da-da-da-da. What's happened to me this week is a bit of nostalgia. Meeting a reboot has introduced me to trauma. I don't know how to even begin. Because the news that broke this week that they're all set, ready to make a new series of live-action movies based on the classic Michael Ende 1979 novel, The Neverending Story, famously made into the 1984 movie and a few spin-offs. As you know from previous installments, I'm a huge fan of this book. And yes, it's a classic tale about a boy, best name ever, Bastian Baltazar Books, who is neglected by his father after the death of his mother. And while escaping from some bullies, he bursts into a antiquarian bookstore of Carl Conrad Coriander. All the names. We should all have names like these. Where he finds his interests held by a book called, yes, The Neverending Story. Unable to resist, what does he do? He steals the book, hides in his school attic, and he begins to read about the world of Fantastica, ruled over by the mysterious childlike empress, who is under threat from a formless entity called the Nothing. And we also have our boy warrior hero named Atreyu. Ah, it's a thing of beauty. I know, I've said it once, I'll say it a million times. I adored this as a child. It's definitely one of my favourite childhood reads. Much better than The Hobbit. Sorry. And this, sadly, is where the trauma was raised with all this kind of news. Because, and apologies if I've bored you with the story before, but it's, you know, it's worth repeating. It's good to talk seemingly. You see, I had this rare edition of the book, which I obtained when I was about 10. I think my mom got it for me, and it was basically written in two colours of ink, and basically as you jump between Bastian's tale and the world where Atreyu etc. were, the ink colour changed per chapter. I think it was blue and red, or maybe it was green and red. Anyways, our poor elderly neighbour, Paddy Crofton, God rest his soul, was sick, so I gave him my book to read. And then about 3 months later, when it hadn't been returned, I kind of said, maybe I should ask for it back, because, you know, it is my book after all, and he looks a lot better now. And his reply was, what now? What book? Needless to say, I was a bit devo. Actually, devo was the understatement of the century, because the poor guy had no clue where the book was anymore. Like, after searching his house, initially he couldn't remember the book, then he couldn't remember where he'd put it, and then feck knows what happened to it. And to make up for it, he gave me a Hal Roach joke book. Like, first of all, this definitely was not a book for kids, but I appreciated the thought. Yeah, it was a bit of a total disaster, and what's worse was that edition of the book was no longer available, and to this very day, is it 40 years later? 30? No, it is. Yeah, whatever. Who cares? It's a lot of days later. That book is still unattainable. And some folks in the publishing world even deny that this version ever existed. Sweet Lord, what the feck? So while I applaud the fact that we get to enjoy another movie version of this classic tale, which today's kids will totally adore and embrace, and I encourage everyone out there to get their kids to read this book because it's amazing. You'll have to forgive me, because I'll be the one quietly sobbing in the back row of the cinema as I reminisce about my safe space and safe place, which, as I said, I'd read about 10 times over those years, and before it basically vanished into the nothing. I like to think maybe that's where it went. So there you go. Yeah, first world problems, childhood trauma. They say it's good to talk out loud, and I just felt I needed to get that off my chest. Ah, yeah. Sad times. Oh, and by the way, very important, I do have about 5 different versions of the book. It's just that none of them are in different coloured ink. And with that, yeah, I think we should go there. We should definitely go there.